Blog Talk Radio.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Hello, everyone. This is Peter Paul Brizola, and we've changed our theme for a while. Seems that politics and poker and poking somebody in the chest in the shower is appropriate. So I thought that theme would be appropriate. Next week, we're going to have, it's tentatively scheduled, I think he'll flake out on me or whatever, Patrick Butler, who is Irish on his father's side and Russian on his mother's side, descendant from the Romanovs. He's still got a claim. I don't think it'll be honored. But anyway, our topic will be, it's scheduled for Thursday, since we couldn't get him for Wednesday, a special, which would be St. Patrick's Day. And so, considering that the Irish, some Irish would still be celebrating, others will be commiserating. So it may be a longer show, and it's going to be eclectic. We'll be covering Ireland's contribution to the military of the world. Very interesting. How the Irish served in militaries around the world, and also in they were forcibly emigrated to Australia, and also to transported. That's the phrase. Excuse me. To the southern part of the United States, some as indentured servants, and also one aspect of the Irish heritage is their contribution to classical music and military music. So we'll be play some excerpts. I'm trying to get that all together, and it's scheduled for Thursday. I don't think it'll be probably my regular time at 7:30. Today is an interesting day, March 9th, in history. Yuri Gagarin, the first man in space, at least one we know about, he was born today. Those of you who follow chess, the late Bobby Fischer, great chess expert, who later gave up his American citizenship and moved to Iceland. Of course, he's not around to deal with the financial crisis over there. Can you believe it? Talk about political arrogance. They had a plebiscite over there on whether or not Iceland should repay these banks that made these ridiculous and speculative loans to the country. And, of course, Iceland has defaulted on those loans. And, of course, the people are saying, hey, we don't have the resources. These were bad loans. These were speculative. And, you make your investments and you take your lumps or your losses or your profits. So I think it was over 90% of those voting, the majority of the country, said no, do not repay the British banks. Instead, the prime minister or the political leader, I think it's president or prime minister, just ignored the vote and said we're going to repay this debt, so-called, to the British and I think the French banks. And this is an example of political arrogance, and this seems to be the disease these days, that these politicians think that they're infallible, untouchable, they know everything, and they're indispensable. So, of course, the people have a way of dealing with these things, and some of them are rather drastic. If it's not the ballot box, unfortunately, it's sometimes with a bullet or a bomb, and God forbid that we should see this ever again. But these people, these politicians, will never learn. Also today, Matthew Henson died in 1955. Few people know his name unless you saw that HBO film starring Matthew Cizerny, Canadian, who has gone to Hollywood like a lot of Canadians. And I forget the black guy's name. But anyway, Matthew Henson was probably most responsible for Robert Peary, the American naval officer, civil engineer, who discovered, the first man to discover the North Pole, or to go there and to successfully, and it was a hell of a, that's a bad word, they wish they had a lot of heat, but it was a very grueling expedition. A lot of dogs were involved, people were involved, and Matthew Henson was a black American who ran away from home. He was from Maryland originally. Never got the honors and the credit due him until very late in life, and President Eisenhower, 1953, received him at the White House. There is a stamp about him, and his son's still living. What's interesting about these explorers, both Peary and Henson shacked up with Inuit Eskimo women and had children. And Henson had one half Inuit son who fathered five other children who live in Greenland today. I don't know about Peary's son. But they came to the United States. Both of them came together in 1987. Maybe there's some video and news clips. That's, 23 years ago. But he is one black who should be honored, and you don't even hear it from these black propagandists. You hear about some of these other people who history will be rewritten on some of them. But he's somebody that should be respected, somebody you should learn about. And he's a guy who took his lumps when blacks were horribly discriminated against. And just somebody you should know about, and somebody who contributed to this country and didn't try to corrupt it, like so many of these current ethnic politicians. It's not only blacks, by the way. And today, George Burns, the famous actor, comedian, died. And, he was born today, excuse me. And this is interesting. He was Jewish ethnicity, a cultural Jew, and he married a Catholic Irish, Glacey Allen. That's interesting. Irving Berlin, who was born Russian Jewish, he married an Irish Catholic, had a couple of daughters, I think. Incidentally, those of you who know music, Irving Berlin, I studied music, so it's a subject I can talk about. Irving Berlin only knew one key, the key of F sharp. All of his music, his famous songs and Broadway shows and all of that, was written in the music was written in the key of F sharp, which the major would be D. I think D major. A little rusty. It's been about 40 years since I dealt with this. Still working on some of my music work. And some of the interesting events today on March 9th in history. The Monitor fought the Confederate ship Virginia to a standstill off of Hampton Roads. It was a famous naval battle. And you know the Confederates, what they did when they started the war, or of course, depends on which side of the Mason-Dixon line you're on, they seized the Federal Navy or the Union Navy's ships that were in places like Norfolk, places like that. And then, of course, we had the infamous or famous Merrimack, which was one of the first ironclads built. And then the Merrimack, which was called a cheese box on a raft. And it was the American Navy, American Engineering, and, of course, was a Swede, Ericsson, who designed the Monitor. American Civil War was the first modern war. We had military observers, and Patrick Butler, maybe we'll get into some of that, because the Irish played a major role in battles like, I think, at Gettysburg and also in the Mexican War. So we're going to get into that. And the topic, if I can digress a minute, will be some of the things you didn't know about the Irish and some of the things you don't want to know or wouldn't want to know. So it's going to be, part of it's going to be tongue-in-cheek or tongue-in-bog. And so we're hoping this will, we'll have that show next Thursday at the same time, and we might extend it to 45 minutes or an hour. We haven't firmed that part of it up yet. But, excuse me, so the navies of the world were obsolete overnight because the Americans, and whether the northern, both the northerners and the southerners, added iron sheets to the ships, and so any ship that was made of wood was vulnerable to attack by an ironclad. Also, the Confederates perfected the first modern primitive submarine. I think it was I forgot the name of it, and they just raised it because it sank. But it did sink with a torpedo. Excuse me, I'm still suffering from this cold or whatever it is. A couple of wooden Union Navy ships, which were blockading southern ports. And here's one of my favorite guys. In 1916, Pancho Villa, a Mexican freedom fighter, I guess you could call him that, and of course Americans think he was a bandido, he raided Columbus, New Mexico, across the border from Mexico, and killed 17 Americans were killed, and that led to General Blackjack John J. Pershing leading an expedition into Mexico. And the only reason that he didn't stamp out or capture these Mexicans was that we were about to enter World War One, so Pershing was recalled. There's a famous American Vietnam veteran. His cousin starred in the movie, and I'll bring it up later on. I'm getting a little slow in my old age. And I recommend the movie, and I, again, recommend that you pay more attention to American veterans of all these wars, because they're major problems, whether it's legal, post-traumatic stress disorder, violations of their rights in HUD-subsidized housing, things like that, and trying to get jobs and to avoid homelessness on the streets. And these bases like the Presidio, which was probably one of the most sought-after postings of the U.S. Army, has been turned into a high-class resort for people who can drive BMWs, Volvos, and Porsches, thanks to Nancy Pelosi and her Presidio partners. We'll get into more of that. And then in 1993, we had Rodney King trial when he was a plaintiff testifying against the L.A. cops, who he claimed beat him. This was the first incident of alleged police brutality, which was caught on independent video cam. And, of course, that is the new field, because the major media has been so much of that corporate and alternative media has been discredited, because these people, a lot of them, a growing number of them, regrettably, are not journalists. They're propagandists for political or sexual preference agenda. And they do not do research. You don't have people going into the obituaries or going on a police beat or doing the research for the stories that they claim that they cover. There are too few real journalists out there, and so many of them lie, distort, and omit. And it's caught up with them. Their karma's caught up with them, because people have a sense that something is wrong, and they're not going to pay these exorbitant prices. The Chronicle will be going up to $1 for the daily. It's already up to $3, and sales, even on Sunday, have dropped dramatically. Also, the people who drive the trucks to deliver those papers get paid a pittance, and any papers that are stolen out of the boxes are missing. It's the driver who has to compensate for that. So this whole communications industry is being turned upside down, for a variety of reasons. Excuse me. And now on the, let's see, I've still got this bloody cold. Now, one of the interesting things that's events that we all should be paying attention to, in 1907, Indiana, which was the northernmost home of the Ku Klux Klan, that in parts of southern Michigan, the Indiana legislature passed a law, America's first involuntary sterilization law, and it was supposed to cover confined criminals, idiots, imbeciles, and rapists. One of the questions about the Pelosi care, she's consistently dodged revealing what's in those over 2,000 pages, that page bill. Nobody's read the whole thing, or one person has. He took 48 hours to go through it by page, and we don't know what's been changed or altered or added. And what's important is to bring it up to date. In 2008, one of the first things that Mr. Rowe did as president, he reversed the funding denial or restrictions on stem cell research that President Bush had imposed because there's such controversy about it. But what's also important is we have a historical nightmare in the medical field. I recommend the book to you. If you can find it, it's called Doctors Under Hitler, published by the University of North Carolina Press. We have a rare copy. And it illustrates, documents what happened when a government took over medicine, and it was especially targeted for Jewish doctors. At the turn of the century, American medical people who wanted advanced degrees or the best training, they used to go to Vienna and Berlin. Those were the places that medical students who could afford to went there. And then some of those doctors and professors came to the United States to teach in the medical schools and universities and to practice. The Jewish doctors, one of the first things in my own family, my father's first wife was German Jewish. Her father was a doctor, I think in Hamburg. And she got out after the Kristallnacht and wanted to travel. She met my dad in Illinois, and he had come from Seattle and didn't want to travel. He had worked a year in Montana on the railroad, and then they said, anywhere the railroad goes, you can travel for free. So he ended up in the Midwest. Anyway, he met my stepmother, Jewish stepmother, and her father was a doctor who thought it would all pass over. He had served in the German army in World War One, and a lot of German Jews, whether they were cultural or practice, thought because they had lived in Germany all those years and centuries that they would, you know, this thing would pass and this was just a political aberration, but it wasn't. And he stayed, and we don't know what happened to him. And my stepbrother, my dad signed him in when he was 17 and a half, signed him into the Army. He was posted to Germany, and he decided to re-up, but he instead joined the U.S. Air Force. And I don't, we were told he was in intelligence or something, and he stayed in Europe. He was trying to find his ancestors and if there were any relatives who survived the Holocaust. That horrible World War II period. But I got secondhand some of the events that happened, the horrible things that happened to Jewish medical professionals who stayed in Germany. They were not allowed to practice. If they did, they went to the camps. They were going to go anyway. It's just a matter of time. So I would recommend this book because it would give people an idea what happens when government, any type of government, takes over the medical profession. In this case, 16-17% of our national part of the economy, and it's growing because if you look at your employment ads in the papers, health professionals are in demand. So it's a matter of using the resources that we have. And incidentally, I will be putting up, I just haven't finished it, our research on the $9 billion community health care program. We have a program in place and has been since 1946 for low and no income people. Those who can pay something, they figured out. But that program is there, and in San Francisco alone, Pelosi's district, there are, I think, 7 to 9 of these clinics. I'll get my figures correct. And they do serve even illegal aliens. They cannot ask, whether they're here legally or not, even the emergency room. Also, it's interesting, there have been studies and statistics on who really goes to the emergency room, and it's not who we think. In fact, a lot of the people who go there are people who are in this country in a questionable status in this country. So this is another myth that everybody who doesn't have insurance goes to the emergency room. That's possibly so in other parts of the country, but there are an estimated, 3,000 to 9,000 of these clinics across the country, and Congress last year appropriated $9 billion. And also there are hospitals that do serve the indigent, not only in California, but across the country and I think in our territories. So it's interesting that we don't hear this from either the conservative or the so-called liberal left media. Or the alternative media. They're always yapping about aspects of healthcare, but nobody looks at the resources that are already out there. Also, a guy put out a book, and we'll get into that, on the resources. There are a lot of interesting resources where people who have no money or students who are trying to get some money to continue to go to college or to go to college, there are medical experiments and drug experiments that pay very well. And there are the National Institute of Health and various other healthcare agencies in the federal government have all these studies and programs which say either to be in it, it's free, or you have no money, or even if you have money and you want to participate, you get paid. And I was a medical guinea pig twice when I was a student. So that's there. And talking about medicine, people better be aware that if you go to the hospital, if this thing goes through, that the radical homosexuals and lesbians are trying to overturn this ban on these people donating blood. And this is exactly what happened nearly 30 years ago, that the blood banks were flooded with disease, HIV and AIDS contaminated blood donations. And some of this came from Japan, a company called Green Cross, which was founded by Major Ishii, the guy who was the notorious doctor at Merckton, who did these horrible experiments, as bad as Dr. Mengele, the Japanese Mengele, we call him. And I interviewed some of those survivors, where they did horrible experiments on Allied prisoners of war, including Americans and Chinese and Manchus. So he started Green Cross blood banks, and they were donating blood, shipping blood to the United States, which was contaminated. Now, we just learned that HIV, you may not detect it in your blood or in the blood of somebody who's got AIDS or HIV, but it stays in the marrow. And, you know, the marrow creates, you know, that's one of the sources where blood is, connected. But anyway, that's the danger. But we need to pay more attention to these things, the stem cell, the abortions. You know, nobody believes, who knows Pelosi's duplicity, believes that abortion or some aspect of that 2,000-plus page bill does not have a circumvention where abortion or partial abortions can be funded. But also, if what I'm hearing, and I'm not convinced entirely, that if these panels of life and death are in that bill, the homosexuals who have AIDS may be the first victims. So that's something for them to think about. Everybody should pay attention as to whether they're gay or straight or, abstain, whatever. But people are getting tired of it. Incidentally, we are hearing in the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, one of our phrases is, who's really behind some of this? Well, you hear about an organization called the POM Group, P-A-L-M, and it's located at the University of California, Santa Barbara, public university. Their former name was the Institute for the Center for the Study of Sexual Minorities. POM is named after a guy named Michael Pond, who was a homosexual activist who died of AIDS. So they're trying to cover their tracks, and nobody knows where they got their statistics on gays and lesbians and NAMLAs in the military. They're not talking about the NAMLAs, who are the ones who think that the children who should have be exposed to sex before they're eight. That's one of the phrases. After eight, it's too late. It's one of their propaganda statements. But anyway, there have been scandals where NAMLA was allowed to enter military bases and go to the schools where military dependents children were being taught, and they were there to give lectures. And so, you know, anybody who's a veteran who has relatives or friends in the military and who have children who are going to these schools on the bases, pay attention. But this whole thing about don't ask, don't tell, isn't it interesting that we have even people like Harvey Milk, who claimed he was gay or homosexual at age 14, he went into the Navy, I think at 17 and a half or 18, served honorably, apparently, for 4 years. So how is it that people who are homosexual in their private life can serve in the military, serve honorably, they don't politicize their sexual preference, they get out, they get their veterans benefits and go and get their lives? So something's wrong here. Something doesn't connect. And then some of the big propaganda from these don't ask, don't tell people, you hear the term thrown around, Stonewall. Well, in 1969, Stonewall was the name of a bar in New York's Village Voice, East Village, I think. And what it was about, and these are, I first learned this from somebody who was gay, that it wasn't about the police attacking homosexuals. This was a bar owned by the mafia where they were allowing underage youth, in New York the age is 18, you can drink, and people, and I think it's in Quebec it's 18, and people from surrounding states come to New York so they can drink if they're 18 and not 21, which is the age for most around the country. But anyway, the New York ABC, Alcoholic Control Board, raided the place and a riot started. In 1969, we have a copy of the article the New York Times surprisingly printed, confession by a guy who later became transgender. He was 17 years old. His name was Rivera, and he's not related to Geraldo, I don't think. And he admitted that the whole thing was about the underage drinking, and he started the riot. And so this term has been picked up as a term of gay liberation. It wasn't. It was about liberation from the laws of restrictions on underage drinking. And there was also alleged prostitution going on there. And the mafia is very involved and has been in pornography, especially male pornography, and suspected bathhouses, bars, and that whole industry. And it's a billion-dollar international industry. We'll be getting into more of where these people operate. It's surprising the things that are going on. And some of this you can see on the web, and it's overwhelming. You're going to get revolted. But it's got to come up. People need to know about this because it's getting so bad that you can't even go to a public toilet sometimes without being propositioned, let's put it that way. And it plays into the Stephen Neri case where the people involved in the public prosecutor's office here in San Francisco and in the state attorney general's office who are involved in these homosexual political propaganda activities and prostitution and pornography. And we've documented it. It's all been tracked, and this is one of the reasons that this case has been going on for nearly 15 years now, and it's cost the American taxpayer an estimated $15 million. $10 million of that went to build a building for AIDS patients and named after Juan Pifre, an illegal alien from and a homosexual predator. He had prior convictions in San Jose and in San Francisco, and when he stalked Stephen Neri, an 18-year-old drunken Native American boy, U.S. Navy recruit, in March of 1996, and tried to rape him, and the kid fought back, and Pifre died. He also had believed to have AIDS, and he had a heart attack, and he was doing cocaine that night. So all this has been concealed by, again, the propagandists both the corporate and the alternative media. But when they lie about these things, it's you and I that pay for their lifestyle, their salaries, their vacations, their medical care, their retirement, and those of those who have connections with the corruptors and HUD. We have at least two media people who got affordable condos through the HUD department here in San Francisco. So we'll be documenting that because it's all real estate and that's a certified documentation. But anyway, I look forward to next week, and hopefully we will have Patrick Butler, and it should be a fun interview. And as I said, tongue in cheek and feet in the bogs, and I think we'll end with politics and poker, which is very appropriate.
Hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Pony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going
to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
Hush, nothing. Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
Well, this is Peter Paul Brazola. Thanks for listening, and go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site.